This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Welcome, everyone, to Best of the Rest, an indie comics podcast. This is Jay Loving, and with me, as always, my co-host, Dennis Chandler.
Howdy, folks.
We're pleased to have Michael Morisi with us tonight, who is the creator of several works that you probably know about, Hoax Hunters, Roche Limit from Image. His latest offering, coming up later in April, is Wasted Space, which is primarily what we want to talk to him about tonight. He also has a novel that came out in January, Black Star Renegades. Maybe we'll touch on that a little bit and just kind of see where the conversation goes. So welcome, Michael. We're glad you joined us tonight.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So I follow you on Twitter, and I also follow Vault Comics, and Wasted Space is getting quite a bit of airtime, a lot of talk, a lot of chat about it. So to begin with, why don't you just give us a little bit about what you want to say about the book and what it's about, what you're trying to do with it.
Yeah, there's a lot I could say in a good way. You know, so basically the premise is that Wasted Space, it tells a story of a guy named Billy Bain. And Billy Bain used to be what was called, he was the voice of the creator, which meant that he spoke on behalf of this entity known as the creator, and the creator guided all of the galaxy to apparently where it needed to go. And he followed the instructions, did what the voice told him to do, or did what the creator told him to do, and one day it all went terribly wrong. And we pick up our story years later. Billy Bain is drugged out and boozed out and just washed up and hiding from the galaxy that wants him dead. And things happen and conspire to give him potentially a shot at redemption, or either redemption or dig him further in the hole that he's in. It's a sci-fi, you know, space epic, kind of a Preacher mixed with Philip K. Dick mixed with Star Wars. And yeah, I mean, I think it's what I'm excited about. I mean, I'm excited about a lot of things, you know, working with the Vault is great, working with the creative team is great. But I'm excited to write a comic, you know, that has some teeth. You know, I feel like we're in a very heated political landscape, and that's cool. You know, we're all adults and all that. But, you know, I feel like a lot of comics, while well-intentioned, are kind of picking at some low-hanging fruit when they try to get cultural or political. And, you know, Wasted Space is kind of doesn't pull the same kind of punches, and I think it takes jabs at all sides of the conversations we're having in our country, and that includes, you know, jabs at myself and things that I believe. And you know, I think that harkens back to some of my favorite books, you know, classic Vertigo of the 90s and early 2000s, you know, American Flag from Howard Chaykin, Batman The Dark Knight Returns, you know, Frank Miller stuff, all that stuff that had this fierce political commentary that was kind of unafraid to do certain things. And that's what I want to do with this, is the entire creative team and Vault Comic wants to do with Wasted Space.
Okay. Well, there's one little thing I like to get cleared up first here. So what type of robot or android is Dust? Now, I want to make sure I'm pronouncing it correctly.
He is a mixture of a fuckbot with a Q, F-U-Q, and a killbot, also with a Q, Q-I-L. And he's blue.
Yes. Dust is the name of the character, so.
Yeah, and right now, that's the character I'm, like, most fascinated in. Just, you know, after one issue.
Oh, cool. Well, we'll see a lot more of him. He's got a weird backstory that we explore pretty soon.
You were talking about not pulling punches, and you certainly, I mean, this starts off clear statement, first thing in the narrative here is the galaxy is totally fucked. We learn pretty soon that this character, Billy Bane, is responsible in some way for this being this way. And themes that run through this are pretty complex. There's a lot going on in this first issue. I liked it. I like complex comics that don't go the standard narrative. You're getting into some quasi-religious themes here. I'm interested to see where those are going to go, especially with the creator, who we start to get a few glimpses of.
Yeah, well, cool. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that, like, there's 2 points I would discuss in there, and I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, I mean, that's what I try to do, is make it a little bit more complex. You know, I think Billy's interesting. Like you said, it's partially his fault, and I think that, like, we're living in a pretty troubling time right now. No matter where you stand on the political spectrum, you cannot be really thrilled about how things are going right now. You know, and I think that, like, in that regards, you know, I think that, like, while, you know, you look at the conversation happening online in the news, it's just a lot of, like, people, you know, slinging arrows at each other, and no one really stepping back to say, you know, this is partially my fault too. You know, like, this is partially, you know, I'm to blame for this, you know, political mess that we're in. And that's something that I had to come to terms with. Like, you know, I'm not happy with things, but I'm not entirely without fault and blame. And I think that's something that's interesting about Billy, is like, he's come to this place where he's like, I can blame the creator and the galactic leader for my problems all I want, but I played a role in this. And for Billy, it's more significant than our roles, you know, like, cause he had a very active participation in what was happening. But I think that's like that's something that interests me. And extending from that, you know, you look at, like, the creator and the galactic leader, Devilus Yam, and you see see these characters and how they interact. Like, a lot of the things on Ways of Space is about systems of control. And you see that with the character Molly Sue and her father and her family. It's about all these things that, like, work to control you. And what does that mean? And what does that do to you? And how do you navigate those relationships, whether it's political or social or familial or whatever the case may be? And that's the kind of stuff that we're trying to get at least. And I think that's, hopefully, I find it pretty interesting. I think there's a lot of mileage out there and you don't really see those kind of things in comics all the time. And that's one of the things that made me want to gravitate towards that.
Oh, nice. So I know you gave up the brief description, and I think that summarized it great about Preacher meets Philip K. Dick. So I can see the themes in that, and I can see the parallels. I'm a big Preacher fan myself. I mean, I think that was my favorite book from the 90s and all that. Seeing how that's an influence on this, and I can see it. I mean, what was it that grabbed you about Preacher that grabbed you in the 90s? That kind of wants you to make a story in that vein and, you know, I mean, is it, and then update it for kind of the, what we're seeing now in the political climate and the social climate.
One of the things I love, I mean, Preacher, like you, one of my favorite comics of all time. I think it's just absolutely brilliant. And I think that, like, what I love about, there's a lot of things I love about Preacher, but in context of Wasted Space, is one is that, like, Preacher was just so fearless, just would do go anywhere. There's no way a Preacher wouldn't go. And I don't know that I had the temerity to go the places that, you know, Preacher went at some moments, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff. But I still love that it went into those places. And it always kind of did it, no matter whether it was like a weird S&M party or these hostile takes on religion. It always kind of did it, you know, despite, like, how foul it would be, it always kind of did it with dignity and at least some sort of reverence and respect. Despite all that, they always kind of, you know, Ennis always managed to find kind of beauty in the filth, always. And that's something that I love about that book. And I think that gets taken for granted. You know, Dylan's art definitely lent itself to that. But that was huge for me. And it was also huge, like, how sprawling, you know, Preacher is. And again, how daring it was to take on a lot of, like, taboo topics. And to do it in a way that just wasn't, you know, Preacher is not a agenda-driven book. And when I say stuff about Preacher, about comics, you know, like I said, a lot of well-intentioned political commentary comics or comics that, you know, comment socially, well-intentioned, but they're so agenda-driven. Preacher is just looking at the world and saying, here's all the bullshit, you know, and that's kind of why I want to waste the space. There's no real agenda that drives wasted space. You know, I try to keep myself as politically, you know, I guess agnostic as possible in the book. And I just wanted to convey these kind of social, political, philosophical ideas in a compelling and interesting way, like Preacher did, and with as little commentary from me as possible.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, you're right. It went to a lot of taboo places, which is, you know, which is pretty adventurous for the time, especially, I mean, it was a Vertigo title, but it was part of DC. So it's one of the big two. And now you're with Vault, and I, you know, Vault's, I think they've been around for a little over a year now, and I've been all in Vault. I've loved the stuff they put out, and I love their premise of being a science fiction, and oriented publisher. And this seems to fit in there. But being with a smaller publisher that wants to take risk, do you feel you could take wasted space to places like Preacher could never go, or touch some taboo stuff that even Preacher couldn't touch?
Yeah, because I think, you know, I think what was taboo then and what's taboo now or has, you know, different a little bit. You know how it goes. You know, the pendulum swings one way, you know, and then it swings the other a few years later. And, you know, it depends on where you're at. But, like, we definitely got a lot of license from Vault. I mean, there's times issues one and two are fairly tame, and three, it gets a little dingier after that, I could say. And there's times I would talk to Vault and say, are you sure we can do this? And they're like, yeah, let's just do it. Let's put it in there. And I'm like, and I've always said, okay, you know, if you want to do it, I'm not going to shy away from it. Cause it's, you know, it's their name on it is just as much as mine is. And so they've embraced it. And I think that, like, I think there's something refreshing about it. I think there's something cathartic about that, to see just, like, you know, it's the same feeling I had reaching Preacher. You know, we all have these kind of, like, little, you know, dirty little minds that, you know, enjoy that, you know, and I think that's okay. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I think that, like, there's so many books that have touched on that. And I think Wasted Space is hopefully part of that tradition.
Okay. So along those lines, and I hate that we keep, you know, we end up talking about Preacher so much on this, but given how that's now gone to AMC and as a show, and they've kind of started to go down some of those paths, do you feel that, you know, at some point Wasted Space could end up somewhere, you know, in another media besides in comic book form? From what you've got planned and what you're thinking about doing with it and going into the places. And I guess from part of that is, I take it it's not going to be an ongoing that's just going to go on and on and on and on. You've probably got definitely a beginning and a middle and an end thought for this. Or is it just an ongoing adventures?
No. That's a good question. No, we have it set for 10 issues because, I mean – to answer the first question, yes, I think totally it could work for, particularly for like a television show on something like AMC or FX or something like that, because you'd have to go somewhere that lets you get raunchy. But, you know, I think that like it could be longer. I mean, comics are different now in the sense that like budget restrictions and market restrictions and things like that make an ongoing series really, really hard. Like it's... whew. I just can't imagine trying to do an ongoing indie comic. That's it's just almost unfathomable, especially things now. I mean, so many, you know, I'm sure you guys follow the news, so many shops closing and sales are down. It's a tough time in comics right now. I mean, I'm certain we'll pull out and certain things will be okay, but right now the market is tough. It's challenging. So limiting it to 10 issue, I think is, you know, sometimes you just, that's that, you know, marriage of art and commerce, and 10 issues was the right choice. And I think 10 issues gave us enough to tell the story I want to tell. So it could go longer, totally, but 10 it gives us what we want to, you know, what we want to tell the story we want. So that's good. And we're going to make a go of it to do as well as possible.
The creative team that you're working with here with on art is Hayden Sherman and Jason Wordy doing colors. For those of you who may not be familiar with Hayden Sherman, he worked on The Few by Image, and I believe he's currently doing Cold War for Aftershock. How did this team come together?
You know, it's funny. I had read The Few, like you said, the Count Image, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years ago, something like that. And, I mean, Hayden's art dazzled me. And then he did John Carter at Dynamite, which is a character and property that I love. I love John Carter. And I was, like, just blown away by that. So I was like, I just loved his rough style. He has that, like, mixture of, like, Chaykin and Miller, like, that early 80s, you know, just that dingy, rough, just beautiful style. I really wanted that. And we pursued him hard to get him on the book. It was funny because, like, I remember the Vault guys were emailing him and, like, man, he's not responding. I was like, the fuck? You know, like, why is he responding? Like, come on, I want this guy so bad. And it turns out he wasn't getting the emails for some reason. So we cleared it up, and then, you know, we got to talking, and he jumped on board, and he's such a good artist, such a good guy. Super young. I can't believe how skilled he is at such a young age. And he's great. I mean, I think he has a superstar written all over him. And I'm thrilled to be working with him. And Jason Wordy's on colors. Him and I worked together previously on a Planet of the Apes book, and I love his work. So we've got a good team, and I'm lucky to be around, like, such really talented, really awesome people.
Yeah, so I really like his artwork. I haven't seen a lot of it, but I liked what they did on The Few, especially when that had the more muted colors, limited palette.
Mm-hmm.
Some of what he does, he puts me in mind of another artist that I very much enjoy, Sean Murphy.
Totally.
Do you pitch this originally to Vault yourself? Or
yeah.
Did it come to you? Okay.
Well, they came to me, they wanted me to pitch something, and I pitched something that didn't take off. I just, like, we were discussing it, and I couldn't bring it together. It wasn't something I was totally in love with, and it just, you know, and it didn't come together, and I was pumped out because I wanted to work with them. And then I'll make this story, like, short, but it was Christmas Eve of, like, 2 years ago, or whatever, yeah, two Christmases ago, actually, and I was sick as hell. I was so sick, and, you know, I've got kids, so I still had to function somehow, and I was so sick, and I was loaded up on these pain meds so I could just make it through the day as well as I could. And I was driving to my in-law's house. I was just grumpy as hell about that, and I'm just sick and mad and all this stuff, and, like, wasted space came to me, man. It was like an hour drive, and it was like a cold medicine fueled fever dream. I wrote it all down, and I pitched it to Vault, like, 2 weeks later. I was like, I've got the thing I want to do. And it just took off, like, from there. It's just like we all saw that. We're like, yep, that's it. And sometimes that's how it happens. You know, you pound away, you chisel that rock on something, you just chisel, 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 and nothing comes out of it. Then all of a sudden, one day, you look at the rock, and you kind of breathe on it, and out comes this idea. And you're like, oh, there it was. So who knows the mysteries of all that stuff, but I'm glad it did. Worked out in some way.
Yeah, I was wanting to talk to you about your creative process. I'm always fascinated by that. My background, I'm technical. I'm an engineer. I don't have a creative bone in my body. And it just, you know, I'm just fascinated listening to, like, artists, writers, to, like, where you get your ideas, or is it just absorbing lots of stuff and then inspiration hits and it just comes out and you just got to get it down on paper. And it just, like, grows that way. So
yeah.
That's how Wasted Space just sounds like where it came from. It just, you know, inspiration from just a lot of input and some cold medicine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was something that was in the water in it to a degree for a while. You know, like Tim Seeley and I, who's a buddy of mine, is a great writer. We're talking for a number of weeks or months about how, like, both of us had this ambition to do a comic like the one you described. We want to do something that was just a little, had that bite to it, had that something to it. And so it was in my mind, and I was trying to think of something, and it just wasn't coming. So it was kicking around in the attic, just one degree or another, until it came together. But, like, you know, in that time, I'm a big inspiration guy. Like, you know, I read a lot, and I watch a lot of TV and play video games, stuff like that. So I'm always kind of actively doing those things and thinking about inspiration, thinking about, like, how this fits into something I want to do, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I think it's you know, the creative process is so enigmatic. You know, it's just a mixture of like inspiration and perspiration and sometimes things work out, you know, but at the same time, you know, I've put hours and hours and hours on stuff that did it. And, you know, that's just the way it goes sometimes. And I'm glad this one did.
So do you actually get the characters in your head, like talking to each other and you're just like writing the stuff down? Or are you like, you've got it from a third person perspective and, oh, this is what this character would say and this is how this character would act. So I just want to get a feel for more like, you know, how you process through a story, getting it onto paper.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it starts with character, you know, well, a lot of it starts with concept. And then when you start talking about characters, you know, it started for me, you know, it all was with Billy and the development set around him and like what he was like. And I just like the idea of this. I like writing about, you know, losers and maybe not losers. Yeah, losers, but the other guy, the ne'er-do-wells types, you know, that's, you know, I don't want to detour too much, but like Black Star Renegades, you know, the whole book centers around, you know, the other guy, you know, like the Han Solo has to save the galaxy instead of Luke, you know? And like, I like that idea of like that personal redemption where people have fallen low and have to bring themselves back up. You know, I don't like that whole tradition of like the Messiah story of, well, I mean, I like it, but I don't like to do the Messiah story of like someone who's like just chosen to be awesome, you know, like Luke or like Harry Potter or something like that. So with Wasted Space, and, you know, it starts with Billy, and Billy's this guy who had a massive fall from grace, and he's, you know, just kind of just wants to die and just hates, you know, has this self-loathing about him, but also the potential to do something good and still has a good heart in him and still has, despite everything, something important to do for himself and for others. And I like, that's a character I like to explore. So you talk about, you know, developing his voice and the way he thinks, the way he acts and what he's been through, and everything kind of, you know, grows from there, you know, with, you know, Dust, his only companion, and, you know, how those two interact. And then I wanted, you know, with Molly Sue, you know, like have like inject a little vitality into things. And she's definitely like this, you know, firecracker of a character. And yeah, I mean, once you start getting those things down, then it starts to be like, you know, you hear them interacting and you hear their kind of like how their relationships form the way that they perceive each other and what they mean to each other.
Yeah, I mean, based on some, you know, your other work, like Roche Limit is also the same way. You know, you don't take, you look at the characters that are on the periphery, you know, not the golden children. A lot of places you can go with that type of story.
Yeah, I agree. I like Down and Out. You know, I like that kind of story. Like, that just, like, focuses on people who are, you know, it's like Preacher, you know, like or like other books in that, you know, that time, you know, Transmet, you know, stuff, books that are just about these characters who are, you know, seedy and not the cleanest, not the most proper, you know, maybe not the most heroic, but I think that makes the journey of the story more compelling to see this person have to rise to the occasion and what it takes to get them to rise, you know, what brings them to say, okay, I'm going to do the right thing. And it's a conscious decision rather than I'm going to do the right thing because whatever, this was born to do the right thing. So, okay, it's time, you know, and I find the former far more compelling than the latter.
Nice. So, you know, I'd kind of like to find out some more of your influences and all that, because I'm a big science fiction guy, and I love science fiction from like the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and the early 80s. And I have to say, when I was reading Roche Limit and the first issue here of Wasted Space, I was getting some vibes from that type of science fiction, you know, some like, you know, especially with Roche Limit, I was getting some like Arthur C. Clarke, some Asimov and things like that. And so has there been any like, you know, classic authors or, well, classic, but some authors, you said you read a lot, that, you know, kind of, that you've enjoyed and kind of influenced how you want to present a story or kind of set a universe?
Yeah, absolutely. And you named two great ones there. You know, Asimov, you know, I think the Foundation trilogy is really big for me. Because, you know, it's about a glimpse into the future, as you know, has these time jumps and has this like idea of just kind of future entropy in a sense of like things don't go the way that we kind of like that other books depict. And that kind of blew my mind when I was younger when I read that about this like kind of busted future that really nobody knew what to do with. And the same thing with like somebody like if we're talking authors like Bradbury, Vonnegut, Ursula Le Guin, you know, who have, you know, who wrote these books about like futures, like, or Le Guin, one of my favorite books of hers was, you know, the word for world is forest. And it's a really, really compelling book about like this, you know, we find this alien planet and it's just a total mess. we go there and it's just an absolute disaster, and it didn't have to be. And that's the key thing. And that's the thing about Roche Limit. You know, Roche Limit is about like, we find this planet, build a colony, it should be okay. But it's not, you know, like it's a nightmare, but it didn't have to be a nightmare. I think that the thing that we lose sight of, you know, I think the take that I take with sci-fi that I share with like Bradbury and Asimov and all those other guys and Clark and whatever, is that looking at the future where things go wrong, you know, where like Martian Chronicles is another one of my favorite books. I think you see sci-fi where it's like, it's this futuristic society where things have gotten better. It's, you know, and this is, I don't want to take too long, but I remember a guy I love, Mike Judge, who I'm sure you guys know, you know, he was in Butthead and Office Space and Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. He's great. And he did this movie, I'm sure you guys know, Idiocracy. It's become so salient. I remember him doing interviews. I saw an interview with him. And they're like, he's basically asking, you know, why'd you make this future so this way? You know, where everybody's kind of dumb and politics are awful and all this stuff. And he's like, you know, I see these movies where the future is sleek and shiny and better. And like, we have all these advances. And he's like, I don't know what makes people think that's the direction we're headed, you know? And that's the thing. I think that's a common thread. I think that exists in Roche Limit. Like, if humanity went to this new space colony, we're going to bring all our problems with us. You know, it's not going to be this tabula rasa where it's like, well, we left Earth behind, so now none of our conflicts came with us and we can start this utopia and things are going to generally be okay. Like, that's not a view that I share. I think it's still going to be problematic. I think it's still going to be tough. And I think that, like, conflict is the cornerstone of our existence, and it's just going to rear its head in one way or another. And exploring how it rears its head is what's interesting to me, and I like to do in my work as well as I can.
Yeah, I have enjoyed it. I think it's a fresh take because it seems like a lot of stuff now is kind of doing post-apocalyptic. You either have zombie apocalypse or you have something else, and that's how they show the interactions. And, you know, what Roche Limit kind of reminded me of was like Nightfall from Asimov. It's like, hey, you've got this great society, but as soon as something out of left field comes, you just see everything just break down to its base needs and its base desires and its base aggressions. And then you're seeing how, you know, humanity, or in this case, you know, in Nightfall, the alien species or whatever, how they really treat each other and how they really think. And I think that, you know, that comes out in Roche Limit also.
Oh, thanks. I mean, I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, I mean, Asimov is one of my favorites, and that's the kind of thing that I think I enjoy to explore. I mean, there's a lot of sci-fi that I love, but those guys are especially, and women too, are especially meaningful to me and influencing what I do and how I do it.
Yeah, I know you mentioned Ursula Le Guin. Like, I read her Earthsea trilogy or Earthsea novels, and that's like a flawed, failed characters and everything like that. And so, yes, it's not ideal heroes and everything, and they're more interesting, the non-Masonic ones, the ones that have to kind of overcome their flaws and they still don't come out with the perfect solution.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and those are great books too. There is like a lot of fertile ground to explore, like flawed people living in a flawed world, and I think that's what we have, that's what we are.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and we're just trying to make the best of it. Some of us.
Right. Before we get off of Roche Limit, I wanted to mention that I read recently that Sci-Fi Channel has commissioned a pilot script for Rogue Limit.
No, oh, that's true. Yeah, the pilot's being written right now. Yeah.
Are you involved with that?
Not really. I mean, involved in the sense that, like, I talked to the guy who's writing it. Will Pasco is writing it. He's a guy, he's written quite a bit. I think most notably and most relevant, he was a writer and producer on Orphan Black, which is another great sci-fi show. But we talk a bit, you know, he keeps me updated, and he talks about ideas he has, and he has wonderful ideas and a great take, I think, and I'm excited. I'm excited to see the episode that he produces. I'm pretty certain it's going to be great.
All right. So yeah, I want to touch on that a bit because, you know, I always made the assumption like, so you wrote Rogue Limit, you know, that's your little pocket universe there, and you know the characters and you've done all that. I always assumed that like the author of that would, you know, you'd be able to write the script for TV, or is it just too much of a difference to, you know, from what you normally do that you need somebody that's more familiar with writing for TV to kind of do that script?
Yeah, I mean, I think that like you definitely need someone who can do it. You know, I don't know that I'd be able to do. I definitely wouldn't be able to do as good of a job as Will's doing. You know, he knows television, and he knows the beats, and he knows what needs to happen in a pilot, and he has the distance from the material that I don't possess. And it's just different, you know, it's a different thing. That's why I get kind of, you know, be honest, like when I see like comic companies hiring TV writers to write comics, stuff like that, it irks me because I feel like it sends the message that it's like, hey, comics, you know, anybody can write them. It's like, no, it's a specific art form. It's a specific medium. And you can't just like throw anybody in there just to like, here you go, write it. You've read comics. You can write them. You know, it's like, that's not true. I think it takes practice. I think it takes a training. I think it takes a certain sensibility to do it. And I mean, you could probably pass and be fine. I'm not saying that it's impossible, but I also think that like, these mediums and these art forms are separate, and they're not the same, and they take a certain set of skills, and Will is doing a better job than I can ever do. And I'm glad for that. I'm glad to have somebody, you know, just, you know, take the baton, and he's running with it now, and that's okay. And, whatever comes of it, I hope for the best, but, it's just a whole different thing. And, I'm happy watching for, I'm happy with the view that I have of the whole thing.
So it really is, you know, quite a different process.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I totally agree. It very much is. And I've done it now, like, you know, I've done, you know, novels as well. I mean, but I had written novels, you know, I just had one published this year, as you mentioned, but I also have written one before that didn't get published. I've written many short stories. So it's not like that's totally foreign to me, but like, writing a book and writing a comic is totally two different things, you know, and that's why it's funny. And I appreciate the question, but I often get asked, you know, like, oh, are you gonna make Black Star Renegades into a comic? I'm like, probably not, you know, it's not the same thing. Like translating it to a comic would just, it's not a A to A, translation and, you know, crossover. It just, unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. It's a whole different thing. And, you know, I understand that it gets lost, you know, whatever, and it's not to say it's impossible to make it a comic, but, like, those mediums, those things are just, they're just different, and, you know, I enjoy them both for different reasons,
right.
But they're definitely different.
So, yeah, I have not had occasion to pick up your novel yet. I like the premise of it. You know, comics are comics, and novels and screenplays, completely different art forms, and they just don't really... You can't just really translate that as easily, I think, as some people.
And I was one of those people. I thought it could. And, you know, I may be biased because I, you know, one of my favorite TV shows from back in the day was Babylon 5 with J. Michael Straczynski. And you see where he's written for TV. He's written novels. He's written movies. He's written comics. And he's done all this. And, you know, maybe he hasn't done it all well and everything, but it kind of gave me that impression that, you know, writing is writing.
Yeah, and there's some people who can do it, and that's cool. Like I said, you know, I wear two different hats. You know, guys like, you know, Ben Percy does novels and comics, and Greg Rucka, and, you know, there's other people who do comics and TV. You know, it's definitely it's definitely possible. It does definitely happens. You know, there's people who can do both and have the desire to do both. But yeah, I mean, it's probably rare, I guess, but it just depends, I guess, on the people, what they want to do and how, if, you know, desire and ability mesh, then, you know, great.
Okay. And I see you also like, offer, I don't know, lessons or a little newsletter or whatever off from your blog site for like aspiring writers. And
yeah. Such. That's true.
Also,
yeah, that's starting up in April. Yeah, it's right around the corner. Where I've always posted stuff about, like, you know, kind of lessons about writing and lessons about the industry and that kind of stuff. I figure, okay, well, I'll just kind of consolidate it and send this stuff out, and you know, hopefully people get something beneficial from it. I hope.
Okay, so you just started on that, so you haven't gotten any feedback yet on it, but you know, if people want to kind of, you know, check it out, you know, you're giving writing tips and. You definitely know how to write.
I hope so.
So what does the rest of 2018, your convention schedule look like? Are you going to be in any cons remainder?
Let's see. I have a juggling act right now where I have book fests and comic cons. I'm trying to, do both. I'm doing, I'm at actually a comic shop this weekend. I'm at, depending on when you post it, Friendly Neighborhood Comics out near Boston, just outside Boston. Then I have C2E2 the next weekend. I have a book fest in Kentucky. And after that, I believe, you know, probably San Diego, I'm sure I'll be at New York, maybe Baltimore. I'm still kind of clearing out, those things. I plan on touring also comic shops on the East Coast, like New England area, in sometime in probably like August or so.
Okay, that sounds like a pretty full schedule.
Definitely full. And that's just the stuff I know about. I'm sure things pop up, and that's great. I love the opportunities. I love to travel. I love to do all that stuff, and especially going to shops. I like going to shops more. I like doing cons because I like to, like, you know, give directly to the retailers who are, you know, working so hard and, you know, putting everything on the line to support books and get them on shelves and people's hands. And it's not an easy job. And I try to do as much as I can to support them and their efforts when I can.
Very good. Well, Dennis and I and most of the rest of our Nerdy Legion Network people, we will be at C2E2. So we definitely will swing by and say hello.
So you're going to be at the Vault booth? Or are you going to have your own table?
No, I'm just going to be kind of roaming. I have some panels, and that's it. I usually, even though it is my hometown show and I love it, but I generally don't table anymore because there's not much for me to do. Artists, you know, they can do commissions and just, you know, just make crazy amounts of money, and it's just great, which is so cool. But like writers, we just kind of stand there and, you know, kind of, it's like, do you want to buy a book? Okay. You know, and even that, I don't even have that much of stock. Like I haven't done really any of my own stuff. Like since Roachlimit, that was a few years ago. Now I've only done DC stuff, and you know, for Image, they'll send you, I think right off the bat, you get like 200 copies of your issues and trades, and you know, like DC stuff, you get like 5. So there's really nothing for you even put on the table.
Okay. So if anybody wants to find out some more about your stuff, where's the best place for them to go? To your blog?
Yeah, I have a regular website. It's michaelpmorisi.com. I had to throw the P in there because someone's sitting on Michael Morisi and they wanted me to give them $500 for it, and I said to go to hell. And so I circumvented that and added my middle initial. So michaelpmorisi.com. And there's also the newsletter box, like on the right side. You can sign up for that and get those writing tutorials that you mentioned earlier. And, yeah, I mean, I'm on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook, and all that stuff.
You have anything else, Dennis?
No, I think we've taken up enough of his time tonight, unless he's, you know, we've, you know. And when is Wasted Space coming out? What date? April?
18th. April 18th. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll be looking out for that from Vault Comics. And, you know, check out Michael's other works You know, go to his website with his blog. I think he's got a list there of things that he's done. I found a lot of his stuff, I think, going of your image stuff on the image page and all that. And, you know, there's quite a bit of stuff out there, and been enjoying reading it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Like I said, it's given me that classic sci-fi feel on some of these. And now I can't wait for that classic sci-fi feel with a little bit of Preacher thrown in and Philip K. Dick.
Well, you'll have to send me a list of some of your favorites. I'm interested to see like where your interests lie.
Oh, well, you know, you mentioned it earlier, The Foundation, and I've probably read Asimov stuff all the way from where he tied everything together from the end of Eternity all the way to Foundations and Earth. So the Galactic Empire novels, the robot novels, how it all ties together. Now it's just, yeah, Asimov is my jam, as they say.
Awesome.
Well, Michael, we certainly appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk with us. And also, I'm looking forward to Wasted Space, and I think our listeners will too. So this has been another episode of Best of the Rest. If you want to reach Dennis or I, you can Twitter me at JForgets.
And I'm at UTENGR.
Or you could reach the show directly, Twitter, at BOTRComics. We will talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. This was a blast.
Oh, glad to have you. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.